The biggest sports stories of the week.
I think that is the attitude you should have. But if the first thing you bring up when you look at the standings is Craig Counsell, then he has real estate in your head.
I don't think you can even argue.
No argument.
The Green Bay Packers
were the way it ended, but like I just said it, like they were 7-8 last year against everyone besides the Bears, right?
Unique and compelling analysis and opinions when it comes to your favorite teams.
As much as they want, because both teams are good and that game to be close.
Kyle, you're not feeling this.
Jason knows I'm not feeling
Kyle
it.
Kyle and I have already had this argument.
Yeah.
You hate that I feel.
What else was on the WB back then? What else did I miss?
You probably saw the Wayans brothers, right?
Yeah.
The Jamie Foxx show. Don't come on now, Craig. Come on, Craig. You know the Jamie Foxx show?
No.
You know
this is Sunday Karma, broadcasting live from the Gruber Law Office's One Call That's All studios at The Avenue. Here's GKB founder and CEO, Craig Karmazin.
And good morning. A lot of places to go this morning as the Packers come off a loss to the Lions. As the Badgers make some moves, football, I guess volleyball, making moves on the court. College football, we're 58 minutes and 58 seconds away from the first ever field of 12 being named for the college football playoff. Milwaukee Bucks have for the second straight year advanced to the elimination round. In the Emirates NBA Cup, home game this Wednesday against the Orlando Magic, playing for a berth to go to Las Vegas. It's just about everybody's last week of their fantasy football regular season. Some teams only have four in their playoffs and have one more week off, one more week of the regular season next week to close out their fantasy regular season. So there's a lot of things we could start today by talking about. But we're not going to talk about any of those. We're going to talk about what it felt like for me to see Reggie Jackson leave the New York Yankees when I was a kid. I'm sure there was a thought for you when Paul Molitor left the Milwaukee Brewers. Or when Lou Alcindor left the Milwaukee Bucks, right? Everyone had those people who devastated them when they left the team. And I think about it in recent years, whether it was those free agent departures or those sign and trades, right? The Jordy Nelsons, the Devontae Adams, even the Brett Favres, right? Think about the devastation. Even though there was drama around each of them, there was a different level of being devastated at knowing you were going to see that player in another uniform. You take it to other sports. You think about the Milwaukee Bucks and the devastation of thinking about Drew Holiday, who had been that person to make the steal in game five, to rip Devin Booker, to throw the alley-oop that became the valley-oop to Giannis for a game five victory en route to the first championship for Milwaukee in 50 years in 2021. Or maybe it was a true free agent departure, like former rookie of the year Malcolm Brogdon, when he left the Milwaukee Bucks as a true free agent. There's people with that emotional connection where you feel that devastation. We turn our attention to the Milwaukee Brewers. And there have been players over the last few years that we've seen leave. I think the first big one of this modern era, we would say, was Prince Fielder. Guy who had come up through the system, had played at a near MVP level, certainly an all-star level, and many thought could play his whole career with the team, the way ultimately Ryan Braun did. But Prince Fielder left, and I think ultimately many fans realized that it was probably the right move. As selflessly as CC Sabathia performed for the Milwaukee Brewers, maybe it was the right idea not to mortgage an entire franchise on one left arm of a pitcher, even if he was willing to go out every third day down the stretch and lead the Brewers into the postseason. Maybe it did make sense to not find a way to keep Corbin Burnes long term, as he was coming up upon his free agency. And it was more valuable to be able to find some assets in return, retool, and have the team once again at the top of the National League Central. Which brings us to today, when Willie Adames is no longer going to be a Milwaukee Brewer this year. Willie Adames has signed with the San Francisco Giants. Willie Adames, who's been the heart and soul of this Brewers team the last few years, emotional leader, on-field leader, set the all-time record for three-run home runs this past year, as the guy was as clutch could be in leading the Brewers to a dominant start-to-finish, end-to-end lead of the NL Central into the postseason and into another fantastic 2024 season for this team. But I think something's changed. I think the sports fan growing up today isn't like you or me, isn't like the sports fan who was devastated to that degree when their favorite player's leaving. I'm wondering if the sports fan today already saw it coming, because mom or dad told them throughout the whole year, hey, Willie's great, but you know, the way we win as the Brewers means that next year he's not going to be our shortstop. And it's going to be one of those other guys who you've already seen come up. Maybe that guy who won a gold glove or a platinum glove at second base this year. Maybe it's one of those guys who we acquired for Corbin Burnes. I wonder, as we think about fandom and as we think about how the next generation views sports, is the lens completely different than the one that we were able to see sports through? And how does that change it for us? Does that make sports better moving forward? Does it make sports worse? Or does it make sports just a little bit different? Either way, it is time to thank Willie Adames for an incredible period of time from the day he was acquired. We were told we were going to love Willie Adames, and we did. We were told he was going to be a leader on and off the field, and he was. We were told he was going to be a winner, and he absolutely was. We were also told the same, that when Craig Counsell left, the team was still going to be able to win. When David Stearns left, the team was still going to be able to win. And you know what? We have seen that that has absolutely been the case. So while Willie Adames is departing, while we believe that this team still should compete and may just win another National League Central title, doesn't mean that it wouldn't be good for us all to still have a little emotion associated with it. Because if not, if we're only rooting for the jerseys and not the people in them, I just don't think it's the same. And it's why I want to see a video when Drew Holiday comes to town for the first time, or when Craig Counsell comes to town for the first time. And absolutely, when the San Francisco Giants come to town, I hope we all celebrate Willie Adames in a way that we weren't able to celebrate Craig Counsell this year. So congratulations to the Milwaukee Brewers, sticking to what has made them an absolute model franchise. And congratulations to Willie Adames on achieving his dream and signing just an absolutely fantastic long-term $100 million-plus deal with the San Francisco Giants. We'll talk about all that other stuff and any reaction you just had to what I just said as we continue. Welcome to it. It's Sunday Karma, ESPN Wisconsin.
You're listening to Sunday Karma with Craig Karmazin on ESPN Wisconsin and WisconsinOnDemand.com. It's Sunday Karma with Craig Karmazin on ESPN Wisconsin and WisconsinOnDemand.com.
So, Kyle, your take on my opening monologue?
Yeah, I think the song, hey, I hope he had the time of his life. And you absolutely hit it perfectly when you said, the generation of children, and I'm part of that, right? The transition of growing up and understanding kind of that baseball and a lot of sports have taken off with how much a small market like Milwaukee can actually pay for people. So when you think about guys that actually left, I expected Willy Adames to leave. CC Sabathia, like, I wanted him to stay. I was hopeful, but we couldn't do it. The Brewers never even offered Prince Fielder because it started with a two, and he had Scott Boras as his agent, so that wasn't going to happen. So I grew up during a time where I understood that what it meant to be a fan of the Milwaukee Bucks, the Milwaukee Brewers, and the Green Bay Packers, where we really just inside a lot of different people, it meant that guys were going to leave. As a Packers fan, you always know. A lot of times, guys aren't going to get that third contract. So you see a guy like Jordy Nelson walk away. You see a guy like Greg Jennings walk away. You see a guy like, I remember we were upset with Desmond Bishop left, even though it turned out to be perfect.
What about Charles Woodson? That one, there's so many where it's like, to me, if I was a kid, and I know Charles Woodson didn't start with the Packers, but guys who were part of, like, those seminal moments of your franchise, who then it just seems like, they just go, and yeah. It's like not even like a thing anymore.
It's what you expect. For me, the biggest heartbreak that happened, and I feel like for a lot of Bucks fans, the biggest heartbreak for anybody who was born probably in the 80s or later for Milwaukee Bucks fans
Ray Allen.
Was Ray Allen. Because it came out of left field. I still remember how that happened right at the deadline. Like, it barely got through when Ray Allen got traded.
800-990-ESPN. 800-990-3776. Do you have your devastation that you remember like that Ray Allen? And we talked about this a little bit before, but has it changed, right? Like now when Willy Adames goes, is it even like a thought, right? Like, have you already turned the page, Kyle? Was it like when you saw the breaking news that Willy Adames was not going to be a Brewer, were you like, well, that's old news? Yeah. It's news of where he's going, but I already knew he was gone.
I said, oh, he went to the Giants. Okay. Like, you knew when the season was over that Willy Adames wasn't. They gave him a qualifying offer just to make sure they got a compensatory pick. We knew he was going to be gone. We knew we could not afford Willy Adames. He wasn't going to take a pay cut to stay in Milwaukee.
Well, and maybe he would have taken a pay cut, but not a pay cut to the...
Yeah, we just get ready for the future, and the future is bright for the Milwaukee Brewers. Thank you, Willy Adames, for your time, but thank you next, as Ariana Grande said.
And when you have your manager say, well, if Willie's back on our team, it would be disappointing for him because it would mean that he didn't get the kind of offer that he wanted to get. I mean, that's an aligned organization. That's not a manager who's trying to posture to the general manager or who's trying to send a message to the media to the owner through the media. That is an aligned organization. And when you see the success that the Brewers are having year after year, and you see the way the fans are supporting the team year after year, that's what allows this to continue the way it has, right? And that's what allows the Brewers to be in the mix. And there's no way anyone can tell me that the reason the Brewers didn't advance in the postseason last year had anything to do with their salaries, right? It was a fluke. It was a fluke that Devin Williams couldn't get a few outs, right? I mean, at the equation and everything they did worked exactly right, and the Brewers were in position to advance in the postseason, which so few franchises have the opportunity to do.
And I believe at the point where a lot of fans, for the younger fans, where they finally got the wake-up call of you can move on and still be better, is when Josh Hader got traded and this team collapsed down at the end after Josh Hader got traded. And a lot of people love Josh, right? You lose your closer, everybody's a star. I think that was the wake-up and realization for a lot of fans that, yeah, people going to move on. So when Devin Williams, when it's time for him to move on, they'll be like, who's next?
Well, and I think the fact that the Josh Hader one was a little different, though, because that was the rare situation where the team was actually devastated by it. And that is what I think took the Milwaukee Brewers and at the time their manager, Craig Counsell, you know, it shocked them so much because I think we've all gotten used to it now as fans. And that next generation of fans has gotten used to it, right? They know that players are going to move on. They know before the big free agent signing happens that it's likely that the player is going to be traded to try to maximize the value in return. Josh Hader was that one unique one where it didn't devastate the fan base. It devastated the team.
Yeah.
It devastated the locker room, and the team just collapsed that year.
They did.
That was the opposite of what we've seen as the reaction that fans have and the reaction of next man up, right? Or next woman up that we see in sports. I mean, that was a really, really unique situation and almost speaks to the way things used to be.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, another big telling thing was this season, I didn't hear once from anybody, not from fans, not on the radio, not on blogs, is, oh, if the Brewers had Corbin Burnes, they could have did this. They knew, everybody knew what it was. They knew we had to move on from Corbin, and we embraced the guys that we got. So I think, again, that just is telling about what you expect as a Milwaukee Brewers fan, Bucks fan, and Packers fan, is that...
Whoa. You're grouping all those teams together?
I mean...
When the Bucks have the third highest salary in the NBA? How are you gonna group those together?
This is a moment. Right now we're in a moment of Bucks spending money, but this isn't probably going to be the reality forever.
Not, I mean, I don't think any team forever. But if you look,
I mean,
at,
the Lakers will spend money. The Knicks are now. Well, I mean, they try.
The Lakers don't always spend money. They don't. I mean that. They're
for
not,
the most part. They're always chasing. They may have a couple down years.
They
to
might
set
be
themselves up to chase somebody.
They might
somebody.
Be chasing, but being in the luxury tax, being in the repeater tax. Being in the second apron, the Lakers aren't doing all those things right now.
Well, yeah, I mean,
you know, saying,
I'll embrace the Bucks right now with how much they're spending. But I mean, I know Giannis just turned 30. Happy belated, Yanni. But eventually, we'll go back to the days where we're probably not spending all that money.
Right. I mean, I think every team, the sports is built for that, right? But I don't think you can compare, you know, the different leagues in that way. I think they're built differently, and the Bucks as an organization have chosen to be extremely aggressive in terms of spending that money. Let's talk to Phil, who's a banker. You're on Sunday morning, Sunday Karma morning, Phil.
Oh, hey guys. Hey, thanks for taking the call. Yeah, I was just going to mention, I know you guys talked about this Hader thing, but do you think it's after the whole Hader debacle, how the team just sort of kind of got depressed, I think, and it had a really negative effect on them, that they're never doing that again if they're in contention? They're not – like, the smart move would have probably been to trade Adames, but that would have had the same sort of devastating effect, I think, on the team. So if we're going to trade guys in their last year before they hit free agency, it's going to be probably in the offseason. Like, we're not going to ride Devin Williams three-quarters of the year or half the year and then trade him. We're trading him now. Is that fair to say?
Ooh, I don't think so. I think it's a good point, and it's an interesting one. And I think the Hader thing was so unique in that there was such an internal strife going on at the time where Josh was refusing to pitch more than three outs, and the Brewers could have signed him earlier and didn't, and there was a lot of drama there. I think that's really interesting. I think you're right, though. I think when it's like that heart and soul of the organization type guy, I don't think we're going to see it. But Devin Williams, I could absolutely see it. I could absolutely see it if the numbers worked out this year and all that. I Wouldn't be shocked if it happened at the trade deadline this year.
Oh, you think we might ride him out this year? I mean, well, wouldn't you agree, like, if you're playing the Brewers game, the smart move would have been to trade Adames
at
the trade deadline last year or something. That would have been the
smart
move.
But I think
but they didn't.
I don't think but I think their game is to have postseason success. So yes, they could have maximized this, but I think they believed, even with the injuries to the pitching, starting pitching, that they were good enough to potentially do something in the postseason. And Mark Attanasio wants to win, you know, he wants a ring, right? So I don't think, I think they felt like they actually had a chance this past year. So sure, to maximize the future.
They did.
Yeah. And so that's why I think they held on to Adames, not because of the emotions. And that's why I think they would do it, not because of the fan and any pushback. I think they held on to Adames because they truly believed he could be the difference in them, you know, winning a round or advancing to the World Series or maybe even getting a ring.
Craig, and I agree with what you're saying. On top of that, there's a lot of great experience that this young ball club got, right? Like, in the fact that you get these guys who get a chance to have a competitive chance in the playoffs with Willie Adames.
Right, so right. But you could argue, oh, they would have got even more experience if Willie was gone.
I mean, but Willie helps you, right? He truly does help you because he didn't guarantee you a playoff run, but having that team and that unit together really assisted the Brewers with having so much success. But then on top of that, the way the Brewers have been able to draft and develop guys, is that, okay, you get a pick for him, right? So you can either trade for prospects or you can trust that we're going to get something from him, and we trust in our system that we'll be able to draft somebody who can help contribute to this franchise within the next three to 4 years.
Yeah, Phil, I want to ask you one last question. Do you think there's something to the idea of having Ryan Braun to Yelly to now Jackson Churio, where the Brewers are like, all right, we're going to have our one guy, and then everybody else is going to kind of be an interchangeable part?
I think there is. I mean, I think you do need at least one guy that kind of fans kind of stick onto, especially maybe not old man like me, but you know, like the kids and the younger, they like. I mean, I think it's great to have that guy.
You got to have one jersey one jersey that people have. Thanks, Phil. I mean, Kyle, that, you know, that is what the other piece of this is, right? Like, even with Yelly out, and even with Contreras and Adames in the lineup, everyone was standing when one guy came up to the plate in this postseason, right?
Yeah, it's true.
And it's the guy who was signed for a long time to come. You know, it's the teenager who's, you know, who burst onto the scene, who now all of a sudden, you know, is going to be with this team until he's 30, right? So I think that's part of the beauty of the way the Brewers have done this also. Right. It's not like, OK, we're just going to have an entire new team every year. Right. There is a strategic commitment, you know, to cornerstone players. And Jackson Churio is seemingly that of this generation.
Oh, there's more to come, too, Craig. There's more to come.
Of him or of this minor league system?
Of this minor league system. I'm telling you this right now. The Brewers are going to be great. We're going to win a World Series. We're going to win a World Series, Craig. I'm telling you, mark it right now. By the time 2030 comes, we will have a World Series banner, ring, whatever you want to call it. We will have one in Milwaukee. I'm excited.
Yeah. Well, that is...
You don't sound too confident.
No. I mean, I don't sound confident because I think winning a championship has so much luck involved. There's so much arbitrary stuff that happens. The Dodgers did get lucky, right?
They spend a lot of money.
No. But if Aaron Judge doesn't drop a routine fly ball in center field, they don't win game five, right? And sure, they're still up 3-2. But, I mean, Aaron Judge hadn't made an error the entire season. And he dropped a routine fly ball with the Yankees winning, you know, by 5 runs. Like, there's so much just random stuff that happens over the course of a season, a series, a decisive game. Think about the Milwaukee Bucks, right? We all could go back to Kevin Durant's foot or Kyrie Irving's injury or whatever the case might be. The Bucks were the ones who were able to do it. But there's scenarios where the following year's Bucks team with a healthy Chris Middleton could have made it back-to-back championships, right? Or that team could have won and the previous year's team might not have won. I just think to count on a World Series is so tough. I think if you told me, hey, I think the Brewers are going to be in the postseason more times than they're not between now and 2030, I'd be like, wow, that's awesome, and I'll sign up for that.
Talk, Craig. Because once you're in it,
you have a chance.
No, I don't like this talk. I like talk of talking about rings. I want to talk about championships. That's what I want to talk about. I don't want to talk about, you know, just give yourself opportunities, because if you keep going at it, you keep going at it, one time you'll crack through. Yeah, great. But I want the expectation to be set here for us Green Bay Packer, Milwaukee Bucks, and Milwaukee Brewers fans, is the expectation is that we are going to win a ring. We're not going to just get one ring during this decade. We're going to get multiple rings in this decade of the roaring 20s.
I believe, by the way, that both the Packers and the Bucks showed this week that they can win a ring this season.
Oh, wow. You think both showed, huh?
Both showed this week in losses.
You think even with the Bucks with
both in their losses.
Boston not playing too well, shooting too well, Bucks still.
Both in their losses showed that that's possible.
Okay.
The Jordan Love showed in one pass to me that he is a quarterback who can win a Super Bowl. When the whole line didn't block and everyone came in and he sidestepped him and then threw that pass all the way out to the left sideline and the defensive back dove and maybe his fingertip got a little piece, but it was complete. When I saw that pass, I was like, damn, Jordan Love's like that now? That was like peak Aaron Rodgers when I saw that completed pass. And I thought, who do the Packers need to beat to get to the Super Bowl? Well, the two biggest teams that are sitting in front of them that everyone would argue are the teams better than the Packers are the Lions and the Eagles. And you're telling me in a big spot, you don't think their two head coaches might end up making a decision?
I like this. That's
going to hand an opportunity to the Packers.
Talk about language.
So I think that is absolutely a possibility. And then we saw the Milwaukee Bucks, and you're right. The one thing you have to say is, how many games in a best of seven are the Boston Celtics going to shoot that way? But we're talking about Chris Middleton's first game back. We're not talking about a game in which you could even look at the Bucks as having their big three. And the Bucks were right there, were competitive in a one-possession game on the road against Boston. And to me, I think what we have here is a team that just needs to find a way to be healthy in the postseason, because we have not seen this team healthy in the postseason except when it's been walking away with rings back in 2021. And by the way, we know Giannis missed half a series against the Atlanta Hawks and played the NBA Finals coming off a devastating injury. So to me, as we're talking about rings and the possibility there, I think this week, in two losses, the Packers and Bucks both showed that don't just wait till next year on either of these teams just yet. Let's talk to Howard. You're on Sunday Karma. Morning, Howard.
Good morning. On Willie Adames, I think of this a little differently. Imagine we're at the trade deadline, and somebody says to you, you can acquire Willie Adames for half a year. You will receive a compensatory draft pick, and it will cost you nothing. Who wouldn't have made that trade? And that's basically the trade the situation we got. So it was the right move. The hitting move was the right move. They just did it wrong. Tell the team first.
Yep.
But as far as the teams in playoffs go, the structure.
But by the way, the one thing, Howard.
Are different.
Yeah, Howard. The one thing I would say about the Hader deal, I even think if they had brought back a bat that year, you know, they needed a bat in the lineup, and
yeah.
I feel like if they had communicated, as you said, properly with the team, and then also brought back a bat, I think the whole feel of that could have been different.
I think it could have been. And they learned a lot. They've done it better since then. Now, Kyle, I can see the smoke coming out of your ears. As far as the winning a ring, yeah, we would love to win a ring in all of our sports. But look at the price the Kansas City Royals paid for their rings. They had years of teams with 100 losses or more. Is that price always worth paying, or is it worth every year having a chance, having hope, being competitive?
Well, and Howard,
I vote for the
yeah, Howard.
The team.
But what you're saying is the Royals paid that price, and they happened to win a ring. But there's no guarantee, right? They could have paid that price and still ended up, you know, losing in the first round.
Yeah, they could have. There's an awful lot of luck in baseball, good and bad. Yeah. Where one play makes a huge difference. I'd rather every year have hope.
Yep. Thanks so much, Howard, for the call. Appreciate that.
Spoken like someone who's never seen the Brewers win a World Series.
Like everyone in the world, because no one has seen the Brewers win a World Series. It hasn't ever happened. 161 games Willy Adames played this year.
Incredible.
In his free agent year. In
Incredible.
This day and age of load management and all that, Willy Adames Appreciation Day today. 32 home runs, 112 RBIs, OPS of 794, 3.1 wins above replacement. That's the kind of appreciation we have today. Appreciation for Jason Wilde, who joins us next. Sunday Karma, ESPN Wisconsin.
It's Sunday Karma with Craig Karmazin on ESPN Wisconsin and WisconsinOnDemand.com.
Thought I'd end up with Shine, but it wasn't a match. Wrote some songs about Ricky.
It's Sunday Karma with Craig Karmazin on ESPN Wisconsin and WisconsinOnDemand.com.
Wish I could say thank you to Malcolm, because he was an angel. One taught me love, one taught me patience, and one taught me pain. Now I'm so amazing to have loved
him. What did Willie teach you, Kyle?
He taught me that you can love and know you're moving on, and still put everything into it.
He ain't teach you Espanol?
Hola! ¿Cómo estás? ¿Y tú?
Hola, Jason Wilde!
Muy bien, gentlemen.
We know Paul Molitor, right? That was the one that really got you?
Yep, that's the one. Kyle told me that you guys were discussing that, and that was a very easy one. Now, I will say as a reporter, just to...
Oh, Ray Allen. Ray Allen got you.
Well, Ray Allen was a trade. Are we allowing trades or not?
I guess. I'm just saying in terms of devastations of departures.
Departures.
Yeah. So Ray Allen got you on that one. I'd say Jordy Nelson got you.
No, actually not.
You were too old. You were too old at that point?
No, not that. It was more the fact that, although good question. It was more the fact, I know I've gotten that reputation because of how adamantly I criticized Goody, but the reason I criticized Goody on that was that he's a smart guy. I think he has been proven right on the idea of it being a young man's game, and you got to go through growing pains with guys and let them come out on the other side. All that stuff has turned out to be true. But the thing that he was wrong about with Jordy was that, and he told me this flat out when I went to the NFL meetings or the scouting combine that year, his concern was that it was going to prevent Davante Adams from becoming the number one receiver. Okay, it was, remember, they moved on from Jordy, they cut him after the 17 season. Well, for those that don't remember the 17 season, that's obviously when Rodgers broke his, broke his collarbone the second time. And Davante Adams, in the first half of that season, in the first five games, they started 4-1. And my favorite Davante Adams, Aaron Rodgers story is, of course, they're in Dallas. Rodgers throws to Davante in the end zone, in the red zone. And Davante, it's incomplete. Davante comes back and throws and says, run that play again and throw me a better damn ball. And it'll be a touchdown. And Rodgers does, and it is. And remember, he spikes it against the wall, I think. And Jordy Nelson, of all the people that have ever been on this team, being able to cede the number one receiver job to a guy that clearly is the number one receiver was not going to be a problem. All the people
now, it wouldn't
there,
be a problem for
Mike
him.
McCarthy,
it wouldn't be a problem for
and
him.
Not for Devontae.
No, no, but would it have been for Aaron?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
He had already. It was very clear to him. So suddenly you got one of, you know, and look, in our culture we talk all the time about being a good teammate. There aren't many better than Jordy Nelson. And to take that secondary role was not a problem for him. It would have been a problem for a lot of other wide receivers, but not for him.
Okay, wait. As we're going through the ones that may have hit you, how about Charles Woodson? That one bothered me. I felt like he had come here on a team-friendly deal. It all worked out great. He won a championship, and he still had more left in him, and he was another guy I felt like they moved on from a little too early.
So that was on my birthday. and having
oh having Kyle, out. This sounds like this is deep. like when
he had to
like,
work on his birthday.
No, I mean, oh, that's a good point. Maybe they made him work on his birthday, but out though. Like,
no, I come on. No. I come on. All right, so yes. So and I was because Charles and I have an we're friends now, which is more of a brag for me than certainly it is for him. But he was one of my all time guys, right? Like if Couch decided to leave me, I would say, hey, can we get Charles Woodson as the new host?
Because, whoa, wait, Kyle, what do you think about the fact that Jason's already thinking about his next co-host? Like, how would you feel if Ben and Nortman already were like, hey, if Kyle leaves, this is who we want? Like, do you have that list? Like, if Ben leaves, who you want, Kyle? You already have that list?
We're too early into our relationship. We're still in the honeymoon phase. We're not at the thank you next phase. We're already imagining what person we will replace you with.
Yeah, that's wild.
Let me defend myself briefly because 6 weeks into having Wildy and Tausch, politicians tried to draft Tausch to become the next Democratic candidate for governor. So
I wonder if they would have drafted him had they known his opinion on certain issues.
No doubt. And then remember too, like Chris McIntosh gets the athletic director position, and now I'm starting to worry. Well, Tausch and him are super close friends, right? Because they were bookend tackles on the Ron Dayne record team and all that. So now I'm thinking, oh, my God, is he going to leave to go join the athletic department? Obviously, he's incredible at what he does.
Come on, they can't afford Tausch. You know that.
Well, I don't know. Maybe he'd be a great NIL fundraiser. You guys know how good he is with people, right?
Now I feel like you're trying to find reasons for him to leave.
No.
Hey, Chris, you guys need an NIL fundraiser? I got a guy.
No, definitely not. I am worried about losing him, not pushing him out the door, even though he jokes that I'm trying to get him another job. All right, quickly, the two that I would say, Charles Woodson was one, you got it. The other one is Micah Hyde.
Wow. That's a good one.
And I would also give a honorable mention to a guy that I was texting with over the weekend because he joined our – and if you have not gone back and watched the Players Only that Tausch did with the guys during the Lions game, on our YouTube channels, you have to go back and look at that. It's such a neat thing. And
wait. Who was the corner who went to the Chargers?
Casey Hayward.
He wasn't on that list.
No, you got to go farther back. And here's the thing, Craig. This was one of your guys. I think he was a regular on Stephen Craig once upon a time.
Vonnie
Holiday.
Wow.
Love Vonnie, and I love Micah, and in both instances, the Packers bet on the wrong guy at their position. They bet on Morgan Burnett at safety, and they bet on Cletus Hunt on the defensive line. Vonnie ended up playing 15 years in the league.
Wait, Vonnie 15. Was on the Players Only?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that. I got to go back and watch that.
See, that's why I recommended it. Exactly. So, again, there as a reporter, there are and look, there's been a lot of other guys that have been really good for me, and I had great relationships with that I was disappointed they left. But that's my kind of top of the charts during my time covering the team.
So, Jason, you'll remember the play better than I can even describe it, but there was a play on Thursday night that made me think Jordan Love is ready to be a Super Bowl winning quarterback. And
I know which one you're going to say.
Yep. Just describe it then.
So he's under pressure. He's moving around inside the pocket. He flips his hips and does like this jump cut that Josh Jacobs would do in the hole to try and elude a tackler. Manages to set his feet in a completely different orientation and throw a dime to Christian Watson along the left sideline on an outbreaking route. And I was, and the first thought I had, Craig, when I saw that was, I can't believe this is the same guy. And I stand by this, but I can't believe this is the same guy that in 2020 and 2021 and even 2022, I thought, man, I never makes a wow throw. Because that was the wowiest of wow throws. Undeniably, I was like, oh, my God, he's back. He's fully healthy. And that is a throw that a very, very tiny percentage of NFL quarterbacks can make.
Yeah, I was like, when did Aaron Rodgers, peak Aaron Rodgers, you know, come back to the Packers when I saw that play? Mm-hmm. And I thought that entire second half, I don't know that I saw any player not named Patrick Mahomes look that comfortable in the pocket for this entire season. And when you think about the quarterback coach combinations at the top of the NFC, I think that's the one I want in Green Bay, right? Let's go through them, right? Hurts and Sirianni, Campbell and Goff. No, you want to go Darnold. I like O'Connell.
And Kevin O'Connell.
I like O'Connell a lot, by the way. I don't like Darnold as much. I mean, you know, I think my combo today as we sit here, again, seeing him fully healthy, playing the way he played in that second half. And by the way, I was at an event, so I missed the first three series, which I think does help my view of that game from a Jordan Love standpoint. Uh-huh. But I think I'm taking the LaFleur Love combo over any other right now in the at the top of the NFC.
Yeah, and my hope is, as I've told you many times, and as I've said to our ESPN Chicago teammates, is that we get to a point where Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams are in that conversation too. Now, here's the only pushback I would give you after all this praise, deservedly so, we have showered on Jordan Love. To be peak Aaron Rodgers, he's got to do it more consistently, right? He just does. And you're right about the second half. But again, he did not have to put them on his back. He threw 20 passes in that game. And I was looking back because I wrote something at the end of the week about the comp between what we saw in Detroit and how the Packers left Detroit. And how back in 2010, when we had ESPNWisconsin.com on its own, and I was traveling to all the games, I was in Atlanta for the loss that they had. It was 20-17 on a last-second field goal to the Falcons at the Georgia Dome. And I always say that I've never seen a losing locker room so confident and so not downtrodden one iota.
Well, Jason, I wonder what you would have seen if you were at Giants Stadium right when the New York Giants lost to the Patriots for the Patriots to complete their undefeated season in the regular season, 35-31.
Right.
When the Giants lost at the end of that year, they end up meeting again in the Super Bowl, the same way the Packers end up having to go to Atlanta early in that, you know, in that postseason run that ends in the Super Bowl. I mean, I think that Lions loss on Thursday night felt like those two losses.
And my only pushback on that to myself is, am I making a false equivalency just because of my memories of that locker room? I mean, I wasn't in Detroit, so I did not get the same ability to have the vibe of what the guys that were there, you know, Domofsky, et cetera. But it's the same scenario, right? And they're saying the same things. I went back and I compared something that B.J. Raji said to something that Kenny Clark said, right? Both their veteran stud nose tackles, and they both said the same thing that in 14 years apart, which was, we're going to see these guys again, and we're going to beat them. And whether or not they do, I don't know. And whether or not they can go into Detroit and win if Detroit gets healthier, right? Because at the end of the season, if they don't sustain any more injuries, they've got some guys that are coming back. They're not getting Aiden Hutchinson back, but they're getting some of their guys back for the final week or two of the season or maybe the playoffs. I do think that we're sleeping on them, even though they're 12-1. We, as Packers fans, we're looking at them as more vulnerable than I personally think they are.
Don't you think Dan Campbell makes them more vulnerable than scary? I love Dan Campbell from all the culture and the way he reversed 50 years of mediocrity in Detroit. But there's something about him being that head coach that just seems reckless, that in the postseason, I want to play against a Dan Campbell coach team. I don't know that I want to in the regular season, but there's something about that recklessness that to me in a big spot feels like it's going to come back to bite them.
I mean, let's be honest. It did bite him in the NFC Championship game last year, right? I mean, he took a chance that he shouldn't have taken.
Yep.
Because that's what he does. And people, you know, that's one of my, I don't want to say frustrations, but when there's narratives about people, and I try to avoid this, I'm not always successful, but the narrative is, oh, that's what you get with Dan Campbell. He's going to take some of those chances. It's just the faith he has in his team. No, look, it's okay to be aggressive, and it's okay to be extremely aggressive. Those are all fine. And if that's who he wants to be, I get it. But there are certain situations that, dare I say, are a must-punt situation.
I mean, when you're don't you think the end of that game against the Packers was one of those?
So here's this is an unpopular opinion, but I actually agree with the decision that he made there, because his thought is not, I need to get Jake Bates closer. His thought is, if we kick the field goal now, Jordan Love is so, like we were just talking to begin this segment, Jordan Love is good enough that even without any timeouts, I think he can get them in position to kick a field goal and retie the game. So he doesn't want Jordan Love to get the ball back. So his thought process was, if we run it, we pick this up, he never sees the ball.
But Jason, if you feel that way about him, but if you feel that way about him, then if you get stopped like they did at 4th and 1 at their own 30, when they pitched the ball back 6 yards and gave the Packers field position that they convert into a touchdown, if you actually believe that, then you could have lost that game in regulation if you're Dan Campbell, if you think Jordan Love could do that with no timeouts.
No, you're right. You're right. It's a tough argument to make. Whereas, in my opinion, the other argument is not very hard to make. You are on the precipice of having the game under your control finally after going back and forth, right? You're up 24-21. You are on your own 30-yard line. There is no reason to go for it there. If you're at midfield, fine. If you're just into Packers territory, fine, but you can't hand them a 30-yard field to go get a go-ahead touchdown when you're on the verge of controlling the game. And if you look at what the Packers did, their first two drives that ended in punts, one was a 4th and 5 from, I think, the 48. At some level, you have to have some trust in your defense, and I understand they're banged up in Detroit, but Matt LaFleur doesn't go for it at midfield on the opening drive, punts it. They go 3 and out, and they get the ball back at their own 48. Like, they literally lost no yardage because their defense did its job. And whatever Dan Campbell's reasoning was at that point in the game, you know, again, he believes in his offense. They were able to get the lead back. But I agree with your premise that at some point the charming, oh, he's different, he's a kneecap biter, everything else, he's going to go for it whenever he feels like it. He leads the NFL and going for it on 4th down by a ridiculously large margin. I feel like in the playoffs, that is potentially a recipe for getting beat because of a gutsy decision that backfires.
Which, you know, and I think Philadelphia, that's like an insecure version of it, where like he was doing it that way, but now I think the GM won't let him do it. And so that's where I'm telling you, I like this combination the Packers have. It like playing the Lions, it feels like you're playing Madden against someone who just like doesn't want to punt and is just doing unrealistic stuff. And if they're, you know, and if they're just that much better than you at the game, they're still going to beat you. But if you're like somewhat close enough to them, right? Like Kyle, you've played against people like that in Madden, right? Where they're just like, they're never going to punt. They're going for it on 4th and 15. They're like,
I recall.
Yeah. If you're close enough to them, which I think the Packers showed they were, like, I think it's going to be winnable. I legitimately feel that way. The only thing I would have loved, by the way, and I know this is an unpopular timing and opinion on all of this, I still would have loved to have seen Aaron Jones with Jacobs. I mean, this offense, like, I just think it would have been really cool to see going into this postseason what LaFleur could do, knowing that there could be some games against a team like the Lions and seeing what the Lions do with Montgomery and Gibbs pretty much all the time in the backfield at the same time. If you really wanted to go into things and look at yourself as even, I still think that Aaron Jones decision is a big one. And I know it's a weird time to bring it up, but I don't know. There's something about that still.
It's actually the perfect time because it brings us full circle to what we were just talking about with Jordy Nelson and Devontae Adams.
Yeah.
Right? Like he is a unique personality who got a Packers G tattooed on his knee, who I think would have been able to, unlike most players, be able to accept that and say, hey, I still want to be the guy, but this could actually be good for all of us that I get a thunder and lightning combination that's more reliable than A.J. Dillon. And again, I don't know what Goody's philosophy was. He has said that it was, we want to bring back Aaron Jones. When he balked at how much we lowballed him, not that he would admit that that was a lowball offer, but it was, then we pivoted to Josh Jacobs. But those 45 minutes when Tausch and I, because they signed Jacobs while we were on the air. And for those 45 minutes that we thought, wow, what a combination, was a blissful time to think about what a play caller and an innovative coach like Matt LaFleur could do with both of these guys, because they are contrasting styles, there's no doubt about it, and yet they're both number one caliber running backs. I agree with you. And their cap situation, if you look where they're at cap-wise, they could have given them a couple more million like the Vikings did, and had both of them on their team and not stressed their salary cap at all. And that was not the way Goody chose to go, but that plays into the age thing, right? Aaron Jones just turned 30, I believe. He has the same birthday as Rodgers does on December 2nd, and he thought that he was playing with fire if he brought a guy back of that age. I don't think he really wanted to bring him back from the start. I think that story of, well, we made an offer, we were hoping he'd take it, was more of a, we made him an offer we thought he would probably refuse so we could move on to Jacobs.
Well, would have been fun for Giannis and Aaron Jones to be celebrating their 30th on the same week and to see if, like the Lions, that could have been. But either way, I think the Packers, I'll stick with it. I think they have that best quarterback coach combo in the conference, which gives them a chance. Jason Wilde, appreciate it as always.
Oh, my gosh, it's 11 o'clock. We just blew through the usual break we have in between.
Yeah, we started with you a little late.
Time flies
by. We started with you a little late, so figured we'd just knock out one big segment here.
All right, well, this was great. Great to catch up with you guys. When's this show on again? I never know when it's coming in.
Next week.
Next scheduled is March of 2027, I believe.
Are we on next week? I believe so, right? The Packers play late next week. They have a Sunday night game, correct?
Sunday Karma.
Oh, that's right.
Sunday Karma is on my schedule for next week, and that will be our final show of 2024.
Oh, that's news to me. Really?
Yeah, the following 2 weeks. Yeah, I'll be at the Aston Villa Manchester City match.
Oh, you going overseas or
the following week?
Here?
No, they're not coming to us.
Oh, you're going there, going over there, bro.
Yep. We may have to next week have Kyle simulate the play by play of that Man City match at Villa Park.
Man City 4, Aston Villa 1. I mean, Aston Villa shouldn't be. I should be positive, right?
Yeah. We'll work on that. You got a week.
We got time to work on.
Yeah,
it,
on exactly. The pitch.
Right. Okay, there you go.
I look forward to joining you for a girls' basketball tournament next Sunday then.
All right. And maybe Kyle could do British play-by-play of that as well. Maybe Kyle could do the entire show in
look
character.
Look at young Wilde dribble up and down the court, and she stops, she pops, and she scores. Look at her.
There you go.
She's that's like her papa. Nah, no, more like her mama, because you know her papa couldn't shoot.
It's the only thing I could do.
Oh,
all
wow.
Right, guys.
At Jason J. Wilde, and check him out, Wilde and Tausch. Have a good one, Jason.
Take care, guys. Be good.
All right. We have our 7-11, which, I don't know, in this world of AI, the 7-11, an outdated concept. We'll talk about that as well as the NFL going to Springfield as we continue with Sunday Karma, ESPN Wisconsin.
It's Sunday Karma with Craig Karmazin on ESPN Wisconsin and WisconsinOnDemand.com.